York tabloids didn't bother with terms like alleged in their stories on the early morning raid in the Bronx, in which law enforcement, local and federal, arrested more than 100 people accused of gang membership. There was no need to observe such niceties in a tale of violent thugs being taken down. The New York Times did use the word accused, but their depiction of the community involved was no less cartoonish. For the last 10 years, the Times told readers, quote, life in the northern Bronx has been largely defined by wanton violence, close quote. One wonders how much the Times knows about what defines life in the northern Bronx and why they and other media are so ready to cheer uncritically for this style of militarized intervention, ostensibly aimed at reducing violence. Josmar Trujillo is a writer and organizer with New Yorkers Against Bratton. His work appears in City Limits, Huffington Post, and other outlets. He joins us now by phone. Welcome to Counterspin, Josmar Trujillo.
Hey, Janine. How are you?
Well, first, give us a little context. I mean, even though you wouldn't guess it from media, I think some listeners probably have heard that crime is actually declining. So what is your sense of what drove this really outsized show of force? I mean, 700 agents. What's behind that?
Raids, and gang raids in particular, aren't new in New York City or really in the United States. But last Wednesday's raid, the size of it and the media hype around it, they're expanding from the last, I'd say, like 2 to 3 years. And probably even more so since the death of a police officer in my neighborhood in Spanish Harlem last October. A lot of that had to do with the strategy of the district attorney there, Cy Vance. Now, Cy Vance's father was the former Secretary of Defense under Jimmy Carter. Cy Vance has really ambitious political aspirations. And so when he came in, I think he wanted to peg himself as like a gangbuster. And if you look around in the city today, we have probably the slowest crime stats in the city's history for like the last 50 years. There's no Lucchese crime family. You know, there's no big-name mobsters or gangsters out there. So how can you become a gangbuster? You find gang members, or maybe in some cases create or hype up what are known as crews, which are these local groupings of young men in public housing that a lot of law enforcement equate to gangs. So Vance in 2014 launched this huge raid in West Harlem where 103 people were indicted, and that had set the city's record up until last Wednesday. Another part of that might have been the arrival of Bill Bratton. He not only has a lot of experience going after gangs in Los Angeles when he was the LAPD chief, but he's also really good at squeezing out as much mileage out of the media in terms of law enforcement. He's kind of renowned for being like a media master,
right,
as much as a police mind. So my best sense is the raids in East Chester Gardens last week, which, again, is, first of all, in the context of a city that is like much, much safer, but even that particular neighborhood, when you look at CompStat reports, again, the police department's own reports, has crime stats for like maybe the last 6, 7, 8 years. Every single year, more safe than the last. And in shootings and murders in particular, which is what the media was hyping up, the last CompStat report we saw was there was 2 shootings year-to-date so far in 2016. So again, not zero, but definitely much lower than highs of New York City at its peak had a couple of 1,000 murders a year. My best sense is that the raid itself last week, which included several federal agencies, it's one of the reasons is federal charges are being used against these suspects. So these guys are no longer being tried in state courts. They're being tried in federal courts. But part of that is also just normalizing the role of federal authorities to deal with is basically street crimes, violent street crimes, but still street crimes. And my best sense is the federal agencies are trying to just find a place in crime because there's really not a lot of use for them in a lot of other areas.
Everybody wants a slice.
Everybody come on into the party while it's getting hot because the police department is making it a point. And in December, and with the help of the Daily News, they basically announced that they were going to be doing this and this is going to be the new normal. And part of that is using the media, like the Daily News, to create this idea that there's a gang on every street corner of New York City.
They also had that useful to the reader guide about your own relationship to gangs, right?
Yeah, I think the quote was, how close are they to you? And they had like this interactive map where you could basically, you know, very conveniently, you could, you know, plug in your street address and find out, oh, look, honey, there's a gang nearby.
I know listeners understand that we're not saying that none of the people arrested is guilty of anything. You know, that's a straw man argument we can dispense with. But the New York Times in their story had basically a single community source that wasn't an authority, and that was a woman who said, "I'm so glad I would kiss the captain's feet," you know, talking about the raid. Well, you also talked to people in Eastchester Gardens in the wake of this most recent raid. What were some of the thoughts that people were telling you that didn't make it into that Times story?
So the very first person that we spoke to, and we went on there on Wednesday, you know, early evening, 10, 12 hours after the raid, and the first person that we spoke to, she was like, "I don't know what they're talking about. I'm out here with Mike." She was out there with her two kids and her dog. She was like, "I'm out here every night with my kids. I feel pretty safe. I've been living here since I was born." She was 37. So she's been there 37 years. "I don't know what they're talking about. If there was any violence, it was probably like 10 years ago, and it's much safer now." She said, "As you can see, I'm out here at night with my kids, and the media is playing this up as if this is a place that people were afraid to step out of their front door." So we went and talked to a few other people, and a couple of people didn't want to talk to because some people, you know, are maybe also apprehensive about talking to the media because they think that their words are going to be twisted. We really didn't find anyone who said, who had anything about kissing the captain's feet. I'm sure there's some people there who thought that this was a good idea, but most of the people we talked to, actually every single person we talked to, said the raid was over the top. Some of them differed on whether the violence was big or not big. Again, the shootings and the murders are above zero, so any number above zero, you could say, deserves attention. But one young woman that we spoke to, she was with another young man, she was crying because she knew some of the people who were caught up in the raid. And she said these people didn't have anything to do with it, or if they were involved in anything, low-level drug dealing or anything like that, this was years ago. And many of them had served sentences and were already coming back, were starting to raise families. So to the extent that there was even people who were involved, a lot of them were changing their life around. And the raid kind of threw them on these federal racketeering charges that made it sound like they were, like, you know, John Gotti. And the heartbreaking part of it is a lot of these young people don't have lawyers that John Gotti could afford. They didn't even have the opportunity to speak to a lawyer before they were thrown in front of New York Post and Daily News front pages as gangbangers. This is something that I have to say as just being kind of like a city-based writer. Like, I've gone to places and I've seen reporters for local news organizations talk to people who give completely different accounts of what the narrative is, and they won't run it. Like, I've seen it with my own eyes. There was a shooting a couple of years ago. I went over there, I tried to talk to people, and I saw people being interviewed saying things that were like, "No, this is not what's happening. This is what's really happening." And local news coverage just won't run it. They'll wait and they'll look for someone that fits the narrative that they're already going in with, and they'll run that. And they'll run it prominently over and over and over and over. And that's why I think it's important to have alternative media be able to come in and say, like, "This is what some other people are saying," to at least create some kind of conversation around it, because it's such a completely self-evident, if you were to read a Daily News article or a New York Post article or a New York Times article for that matter.
There's a point at which the conversation about protecting a community becomes really demonizing the community. I mean, how are you helping anybody by declaring that their life is defined by wanton violence? We see neighborhoods turned into problems in themselves. It's not the crime, it's the community that becomes the problem. When you talk to community advocates, they have their own ideas about how to improve things in their community. If, say, the question is gang membership, you know, or violence in public housing, what are some of the things that those community members would point people to that we're maybe not hearing about?
There was a great article in a website called the Juvenile Justice Internet Exchange back in 2014 after the West Harlem raids. And it was actually being written before the raids happened. And the headline said it all. It said, "We asked the city for help, and we got a raid instead." And what people were saying, and what that author and a lot of people had been saying for a long time, is that to the extent that there was violence, community members wanted to steer youth away from violence to begin with, give them other options in a place where there's virtually no job opportunities, education is crumbling or non-existent. There is a sense amongst a lot of people of color in low-income communities across the city that this just condensation of poverty is at the root of any violence. And again, the violence is being hyped. But to the extent that there is violence, community members wanted an approach that really steered people away and got at root causes, and they were continually ignored over and over. And so what they got instead from the city was a giant raid, because that's what the city understands. That's what the police department understands. And politically, for their own reasons, it was self-serving. They want to show that they're, you know, tough on crime still, you know, even if the crime is a fraction of what it was 20 years ago. And so they place these kids on a basically like a super predator pedestal and frame them in this way. And all of those conversations about after-school programming, community centers that need to be reopened because they've been closed for 5 years. In Manhattanville, which is one of the houses in West Harlem, they had a community center closed for 5 years straight. All of those issues just are completely ignored. Poverty, we don't want to hear it. Opportunities, what's that? Like, it's about the gang raid, it's about the gang members, gang member this, gang member that, and that's all it ends up being for the people who hear about this in the media, and that's all they'll ever see about it. That's the double slap in the face. On the one side, you get the raid, and on the other side, you get the media painting your entire life as just revolving around violence.
We've been speaking with Josmar Trujillo. You can find his recent piece, NYPD Raids Won't Solve NYCHA's Violence Problem, on the No Backspace blog at citylimits.org, and Gang Raids and Our Addiction to Super Predators on Huffington Post. Josmar Trujillo, thank you very much for joining us today on Counterspin.